It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, and welcome back to the 90 Day Fiancé Rehab Ups podcast, where every week we get together and we talk about everything that goes on in the 90 Day Fiancé franchise, the good, the bad, the downright ugly. Welcome aboard to the Hot Mess Express. I am your host and conductor, Puya Zanbakili. And of course, in order to break down these two shows, I can't do it alone. I need backup. I need help. So once again, from the RHAB class of 2020, I have with me Sasha. Sasha, how are you doing today?
Hi, Puya. I'm doing well. I'm sad I'm not in a cat cafe having this conversation with you, but so excited to be here.
Same. I was thinking, you know, cat cafe, maybe we squash some grapes today, but, you know, this will have to do. We can certainly talk about these events instead of being at them, so it'll be fine.
Yes, and a lot less sweaty, I think, with the grapes.
Oof. Yes, please. Yikes. So as is the case with the 90 Day Fiancé podcast, we like to talk about each couple one by one. We usually go through Happily Ever After first, then we go through The Other Way to make sure you get your fill, you get your conversations in with Happily Ever After episode 12 and The Other Way episode 14. Now, Sasha, which couple do you want to talk about first from the Happily Ever After franchise?
I think we can go with a little easier one with Kalani and Asuelu today.
Sure. So that sounds good to me. So I'm very happy to be talking to you today because last time we got to talk to you, you had not been caught up with Happily Ever After. So I look forward to getting your fresh takes on all these couples. Take it away with Kalani and Asuelu. What have you been seeing from them leading up to this? And then what did we see in this episode?
Yeah, I loved Happily Ever After, actually. It's really funny because I think they're both the other way at this point. Like, most of them are in another country, but here we are. With Kalani and Asuelu, I thought they were so interesting because I think they're the closest in culture versus all the couples on any of these shows. So it's really interesting how much conflict they have because they are similar. And Kalani's dad, especially, who is Samoan, has all of this baggage and pushing her not to, you know, be with someone that's Samoan. So I think a lot of their conflict comes from this. And Kalani really being half white and raised in America. So that's where really this episode's conflict kind of finishes, where last episode we saw them, where Kalani and Asuelu's family about to fight. Asuelu's mom is pretty strong, by the way, to hold Tammy back, which was really funny to watch. And yeah, so now we find Kalani at a hotel because her and Asuelu had a big fight after he heard the sisters talking about him. He went back to his family because he loves to like avoid. I think that's his just MO. He runs away. And I was really confused how it escalated because I thought Asuelu was on Kalani's side. He, you know, agreed that his parents or his mom went on to level 70, as he said, and all of a sudden, he didn't like it and he just left. So Kalani really thinks that he needs to go to therapy to fix his behavior. There's a lot of underlying issues maybe. And Kalani's mom, who they're talking to in the hotel room, also notes that this might be part of Samoan culture where the woman needs to be more submissive and Asuelu as a man isn't ready to be challenged in that way. Their age dynamic also creates weird power structures, I think, but here we are. Kalani obviously isn't happy, and in her confessionals, she's talking about how she maybe needs to stay because of the children, and that's probably the only reason she wants to stay, I think. Asuelu, all of a sudden, is now back at the hotel. He's celebrating Valentine's Day. He has all of these beautiful balloons and all of his extra stuff, which I think is just classic deflection. Because he just left, and then all of a sudden he comes back with balloons, and, you know, balloons make everything okay. Their problems, I think, originate from different expectations of what really a marriage looks like. So they talk about it, and they talk about how both of their families have been overbearing, and their compromise is therapy, which, again, I don't think Asuelu knew what he was agreeing to. I think he was just agreeing to stop fighting. And he's just so young, so I really just, he's so in over his head. And then they head to the airport, which again, they fly together, but it really ends with Kalani saying, I'm trying to even figure out if this is for me.
Yeah, so they, honestly, the season starts and it was all man-child like alert all over the place. It was like, this is too much from Asuelu, I'm not loving it. And then it was like a 2-episode arc from pretty much from when the food truck happened all the way to here, where I was like, man, Asuelu's figured it out. He's on the right side. He's supporting Kalani. I love all of this. He's standing up to his family. And then it took one conversation, one miscommunication conversation about who would drop whose sister in what fight. And that causes Kalani and Colini to be talking. That caused Asuelu to get mad and leave. And then they left. So my first question was, why did you both leave the Airbnb? Couldn't someone have just stayed there because none of you were there? Like, I didn't understand that part. Did they check out and that wasn't made clear to me? Because I was like, that's just like reckless spending. If you had an Airbnb, then you got a hotel on top.
That's exactly then, what I thought. I like actually made that note. Like, maybe yeah. The ghost, that's why they're scared and don't want to live alone.
Oh, yeah. Kalani was like, I'm not trying to, my sister left, he's gone, I'm not trying to stay here with the kids and the ghosts. That's not happening. So she left into a hotel. I did find it was very Asuelu to show up with balloons and flowers. Be like, hey, well, I know you're mad, but it was Valentine's Day today, so can we just not? And then when she brings up the conversation, he's like, well, I didn't come back here to talk about this. It's like, well, that now we're back to man-child Asuelu. I don't like that. I think that it took a lot out of Kalani to, you know, do this trip. She didn't want to travel with the kids in the first place. She didn't want to go to Samoa. Now she's accepted. Let's go to like Washington. Let's see your family. Or is it Portland is where they are? No. Okay. It doesn't matter. You know what? The geography doesn't matter. The point is she didn't want to travel. And then for her to have the kids come out, she comes out, they meet the family. It's very clear that Asuelu's family wants her money, or like wants her family to provide money. And they're being very forceful, very rude about it. She battles all this and then she has to deal with him too. I can see why she's at the end of the rope here. And I could also see why she would stay just for the kids, because I don't think she wants. I think from the minute they were together, it was because she got pregnant pretty much very early on into that relationship. And it's been like, well, we got to keep it together. We got to keep the family together. And then all the way here, it's like, well, at this point, am I keeping a family together or am I raising a third child? Like, what am I doing? So I hope they sort it out, because I like both of them. I do. Asuelu, I like because he's a lovable goof, but also he is very immature. So I don't know what's going to happen here. I don't know if we're going to see a happy ending with them in this season. What I do know is that probably this break is going to come to a head. Like, it has to pay off some dividend, because if they've needed it for this long, then yeah, it should show up.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think I was really proud again of Asuelu because I was like, oh, he's standing up for himself. And it also broke my heart just hearing him talk about money and how they just don't have it. And how his kids might die, like, because they don't have food, and Asuelu's mom not really having it. So I thought I also think it's really interesting because are they surviving off of his $1,000 a month? Like, all of them? Or how does that work? Because then that adds another layer to this, right? Like, money is also an issue for them that they, I feel like, haven't talked about until now.
Yeah, like, from my understanding, based on, like, context clues and what we've seen, is that the family is definitely supporting them with, like, accommodations and stuff, I'm pretty sure. But then I believe they're starting to, like, you know, the day-to-day is being moved over to them, to, like, her and Asuelu. But he's working part-time. They're definitely not getting enough on their own, even for their own family, let alone to serve, to provide for a whole other family. So I think that there is some truth to the to Asuelu's parents being like, or family being like, hey, well, don't you have money? Like, you clearly do send us some. I see why they're saying that, because he's definitely getting money from somewhere else for the family, but that's not money for them to decide what to do with. That's money that's given with a, hey, this is for rent, this is for utilities, this is for your family. It's not like, do what you want to do with this $20. Like, that's not what it is.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's where this communication breakdown is happening, where I really understand, because I think it's a generational also difference, where Asuelu's mom, you know, she's like, well, why did I have all these kids if no one can support me in my old age? And right. I think that's the issue, is that Asuelu is not there yet. Kalani definitely is not going to, you know, I don't want to say allow, but, you know, not fly. This is not going to fly with her either. So I think it's also this generational difference, not just cultural.
Yeah, I do think it's a combination of there's a little bit of cultural there. There's a little bit of generational. Ultimately, it's just a different it's a different world that he's come from, and he's no longer in that world, even though his family might still be. So it's a hard thing for his mom to wrap her head around, and it's a hard thing for Kalani to wrap her head around. And I think in the middle of all this is Kalani's dad, who definitely gets it. I can tell he understands what's being asked of him and what's happening, but also he warned her of this way before, of like, hey, like, this is something that could happen, keep your eyes out. And sure enough, here we are.
Yeah, I agree. I think the dad maybe could serve as the peacekeeper, because it seems like the dad is the head of both households. So I really think that maybe dad needs to step in, or someone in that way, to, you know, really, like, do a little bit of mediation and some financial training, honestly, because, again, I'm so confused, because if Asuelu believes this, right, that he needs to send some money, he just doesn't have it, then they need to rework their finances and do a little bit of budgeting to figure this out, instead of constantly being in this, you know, space of fighting and unhappiness and just, like, stress.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I look forward to seeing a new leaf turn for this family. I do. Until then, it's going to be hard to watch, especially if they're going to keep fighting. So we'll see. The next episode's preview of them is them talking things out. So we'll just have to see where they go, Sasha. We really do.
Yeah, I'm praying for them. I really am.
So where I want to take us next is somewhere bizarre, somewhere that left me being like, what was this episode for you? I want to talk about Elizabeth and Andre's arc this episode. So last time we saw them, they've been dealing with that. It all goes back to that fallout from that one dinner where Andre and Charlie got into, like, conversation, nearly got into blows, even though it didn't look like it was going to go anywhere close to that. And then Chuck and Charlie are still being detectives. We're still trying to figure what's going on. And they said, oh, we're going to go talk to Marcel. So that happens this episode. But before that happens, the families, both sides, have decided to go to a countryside to make wine as a family. this sounds like a good activity. Okay. There were some reads along the way on the bus. This family's shady. I'm telling you, like, this, no one in this family likes one another. It's very evident. And I love how Jen, the sister, keeps trying to take shots at Andre, but Andre served her back with, like, I wouldn't be shocked because you thought China and Japan were the same nation. She's like, I didn't. He's like, yeah, you did. And I was like, you know what? I think Andre's right on this one. She looks like she might have. So, like, this family is just so dysfunctional, and it's so hard not to cringe, but also, like, can't take my eyes off the TV at the same time. But then, Sasha, in the midst of all this, they had, like, the sweetest family moment I've seen on all of Happily Ever After this season. With both families talking about how to do the grape stuff and, like, how to make the wine, and there's a machine. And then Chuck talks about, well, in the movies, we do it. I see it done by feet. Did you guys used to do it by feet? And then they were like, hey, go nuts. Do it in this bucket. And then Chuck removes his stanky socks and gets in there and stomps some grapes with his feet. Then his family joins him. And then Andre, with the proposal of the century, says, hey, Charlie, if you do it, I'll do it with you. And then we had two grown men who hate each other in a little bucket together, stomping away on some grapes. Before we go any further, I have to hear your reactions to all this. What did you think watching this scene?
Oh my God. What a wild ride this bus ride was, right? Where in general, with this, both of these families or this situation, right? Like, what is the word for, like, it's Eurocentrism, but where, you know, the worldview is centered on Western civilizations, but just for Americans, right? Like, that's what this family is. Where, and, like, I don't know if you've noticed that Chuck always has a USA hat on.
Oh, always. Classic Chuck.
Exactly. So, like, this family is so crazy, and I just could not handle Jen's, like, constant shade about, well, this, we're going to the country? Is that what this, like, Moldova is? Is that all we're gonna do? And then the jab about the donkeys and all of this stuff, and talking about Dr. Jekyll and Hyde, what are we gonna get from Andre? Like, it's hilarious, and, like, I'm, like, holding on to my seat because I don't know when it's gonna go left.
She's just she comes off so uneducated, and, you know, the type of person to be like, oh, they eat pasta in France too? It's like, I'm sorry, did you think that this was a unique dish to America? Like, oh, they have burgers in Thailand? What? Like, it's just so, it comes off very like, I do not care about any other nation anywhere else in the world but my own. Which, like, be a patriot, you know, you be proud of where you come from, always. I recommend it, you know, but then also understand that there's a world going on outside besides just your own. So yeah, Jenna's low-key the, like, here's the thing. Chuck is the worst. Charlie is the worst. Andre is the worst. But Elizabeth is the worst. But then Jen being the one that's, like, the subtle worst makes her the worst, because you don't see it coming, and it's just so annoying.
Yeah, the passive aggressive, I think, is what really, like, kills it for me. Because everyone else, you're like, oh, you're just a jerk. Like, I know that, like, that's just what you give off. Like, there's no, like, beating around the bush with it. But with Jen, it's like, what is your deal? Like, she will, like, smile and then, you know, play with her hair and then say, you know, this, like, snide remark.
Yeah, she went to the Regina George School of Meandom. If I've ever seen a graduate from there, it's her. My favorite part of all this was the squash them grapes chant from Chuck. Like, stop trying to make squash them grapes a chant. It's not a thing. You're making it a thing, but whatever, do you. But then Chuck and Charlie are not done, Sasha. This may have looked like it was all good, but then we got a confessional being like, well, this does not erase what happened the other night. Because why would it? That would mean you have no storyline to be on this show. Chuck and Charlie, we're on to you. So then Chuck and Charlie, like the two annoying little detectives they are like, we're going to go meet up with Marcel and we're going to investigate what has been going on with Andre. We're going to get some answers. So Jen, of course, goes with them because every evil duo needs a trio, a third. So Jen goes with them. And then poor Marcel at this meeting is just being torn to shreds, getting questions from every direction. None of them phrased kindly. None of them, they're all phrased as demands. Like, if I was him, at some point I would have been like, hey, Charlie, take a seat. Like, calm down. You're not, like, who do you think you are? It was very irritating to watch. But basically, given the little crumbs we got, here's what was said, right? Essentially, from my understanding, Andre and Marcel worked in the police force together. And they've been talking about how the police force has a tendency, can be corrupt. People can't give bribes to the police to do this and that. They were asked to do something that they didn't want to do. And as a result, they moved out of the country to disconnect from it so that nothing bad would happen to them or their families. That's what I got. And that's fine. I accept the story. Now, it doesn't matter what I think, because Chuck and Charlie do not buy any of this. They think that Marcel is phrasing the story to kind of like benefit Andre. And it's like, I don't like Andre either, but who cares at this point? Like, you both have criminal records. Why are you guys talk about, like, who are you to speak on this? It's just so infuriating with these two. I can't. I really can't.
Yeah, that was literally me screaming at the TV saying, who do you think you are? Like, just saying all this wild, wild, wild stuff where, one, you live in Florida of all the places, because I wrote this down where Jen said, even the cops break laws here, like, confused. You live in Florida, ma'am. You live in Florida. So that's what I thought was hilarious, because they could not figure out, oh, the cops are corrupt. I don't believe it. You're lying. So I think fundamentally, they just don't understand what it means to live in another country again. And that this, and it could be true. Like, I actually, like you, believe that Marcel isn't lying. I think we're not getting the full story, but I think Marcel is like mostly giving us the truth about what happened. Like, it just wasn't a place they wanted to live in. Because even when I grew up in India, like, listen, bribes are a thing. Like, it's unfortunately part of the world. And maybe it's not part of American world in the same way, but it is part of America. But anyway, that's a different podcast. So it's really interesting, because I think fundamentally they can't wrap their head around authority being paid off. So that's why they're, it doesn't matter what Marcel or what anyone says. I think they're just not going to believe it.
Yeah. And like, you know, I come from another country. Like, I lived in Dubai. There's a thing called Wasta, which is basically like you have some kind of pull with someone in a higher power that's going to get you further, that's going to allow you to get away with stuff. It's just, fact of the matter is, most places have that. So that's not, I don't want to act like, oh, how, what a sacred thing that's being like stolen in Moldova. It's all over the world. It's a normal thing. Again, these two are not the two people to like get on a righteous box and start trying to like preach positivity, because they're not, they're no saints. They really are not. I don't know. So guys, here's the thing. For all we know, yeah, maybe Andre was shady as a cop or something and then had to run away. Maybe it's not the story that Marcel is giving us, but I see no reason for them to, you know, keep prodding, because my understanding of it is this is being televised. This is being filmed. The less they put out there for people to see, the better it is for them, because they clearly left the damn country for a reason. So I feel like just leave it. I mean, you guys are just, again, I really feel like it's a glom on for storyline. It's like, well, if we don't have this, what do we have? Are we going to talk about how we don't like pig feet again? Or like, is it that kind of thing? That's what their storyline is going to be at that point. So, yeah, they're the worst. They really are the worst. And just let me quickly see if there's anything else we need to talk about with them for next week. So next week, they are going to be investigating a little bit more. But this time it's going to be Elizabeth and Andre kind of talking about that stuff. So I don't think it's going to get anywhere. My one question to you is, do you think we will get to that wedding by the end of this season?
I think it'll be the last episode, probably, if anything, because currently Chuck is paying for it. And I don't like, is that still going to happen? I think that's the big question. But if they're going again, like you were saying about their storyline, are they trying to get a spinoff, and then the wedding happens in the spinoff? So that's where I would, if it doesn't happen this season, I think it's only because they're holding on for something bigger.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the only reason.
I don't know. Yeah. I'm excited. I'm excited to find out. I do think that obviously they end all the seasons with like the big events, the weddings, the engagements, the proposals. But for some reason, I have a feeling that because of how much we've been getting Elizabeth and Andre in other seasons, I could totally see us getting cliffhangered and then they're back in the next season again with the rest of their saga. Because of course they are. So let's hope that's not the case.
Oh my God. Let's see. We're now jinxing us.
Yeah. Like, I'm just ready to be done with Elizabeth and Andre. I feel like they've gotten too much TV time for the story and the excitement they bring me, which is nuts.
Yeah. And it's just cringy to watch them, you know, because it's the patriarchy and the like misogyny is like, it's not fun, right? It's not like I can just like poke fun at like, haha, look at you with your like being rude to women and saying women have to listen double in Moldova. Like, I don't think that's fun. Like as a viewer, I don't find that like enjoyable.
It's here's the thing. If it was a one-off comment, it's like, wow, look at this pile of garbage. Like that was, you know, and then you can roast them a little bit. But then when it's every episode, it's a little bit like a, like someone actually has to live with you and you are like this. That's sad. Like that, I'm more sad than I am like enjoying you at this point. So yeah, okay. Well, I think the less we speak on them at this point, now that we're done with them, the better. Where do you want to take us next to take us away from that madness? Into another
yes,
madness.
Let's just get this one out of the way, you know? So I think we should go to Larissa because I just do not know where to start with this. I have loved Larissa up until this episode, I want to say, where I think she's...
It's changed now, is what you're saying? Like, after this episode, you're out on Larissa?
I think I just feel sad now. Like, first, I was, like, enjoying her. You know, I was like, yes, I, like you. I think you're wild. Like, I would never... Mm-hmm. You know, she's living a life that I would never want to lead, but I think it's fascinating, so I can't help but watch. But now I'm like, oh, no, Larissa. Like, I think you should not be on this TV show anymore. So that's where, like, I'm struggling with her. Where now we see Larissa. She's been hinting at, I think, in these past few episodes about not feeling comfortable and really, you know, taking on to her heart and her mind what Eric has said about her to his, like, flings, his ex-girlfriends, whatever they are. His entanglements, if we might say. and, you know, she's really taken that. And I think... I'm not a doctor. I don't want to diagnose, but I feel like she has body dysmorphia and maybe that is what's causing all of this. So we see Larissa and Eric and now a new friend, Heather, going to the doctor, to plastic surgeon to figure out if Larissa can augment her body some more. And everyone's trying to almost explain to her, hey, let's try to be a little more real, quote unquote, and that's not what she wants. She wants to look like a blow-up doll, she said. And
yes,
the best, and I think the most 180 of all of this is that Eric is paying for them, not Larissa, which has been fascinating because this man don't even have a phone that he paid for.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm already confused about how Eric is paying, or like he says, help with this investment, whatever that means.
Oh my God. Yeah, the entire phrasing was very weird with this guy.
Well, I think he's weird. Like, I really like to look at people's eyes, and his eyes really freak me out. Like, they stare you down, like, through the TV, I feel. And something's up, for sure. Like, if you told me, unfortunately, that this man had, like, a record or something, like, I wouldn't be surprised. Like, that's the vibe I'm getting. And I think the investment is that, you know, maybe her like brand deals that come after, or, you know, being on another 90 day or season, whatever the next season is. So maybe that's the investment, because it's just so rude to say that way. And then she, you know, talks about it. The doctor, I think Heather is the only person that's honest with her to say, I don't think you should really do it, or, you know, don't go this far. And everyone else is kind of encouraging her. And I also thought the doctor was really funny because he's upselling. Like, he's like, oh, what about your butt? And what about this and that? So I was like, yeah, you do you, doctor. And then after that, we go into them going to the lingerie store. And then you really see all of the underlying issues because they talk about their lack of intimacy. And they've been talking about that for a while. And now, again, she seems to be taking that burden on herself about how she wasn't comfortable with her body. And that's why maybe all of these issues happened, which, again, is not true. That's not how this works. So she's now talking about liposuction and blah, 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 all of these things, and says she wants to look like a white mannequin, which also, like, you're Brazilian. You're not white. Like, different body structures, and that's okay. And then she ends with, you know, to say that in her confessional that her new body, like when she wakes up with her new body, everything's going to be good. And I just want to be like, no, ma'am, like that's not true. Like interception. Don't do that. So that's, yeah, that was Larissa. And I think this whole moment for her.
Yeah, it's so I first want to talk about Eric-y because in my notes, I have Eric-y constantly looks like a guy who hasn't slept a wink in 2 weeks. Like, he looks intense every time we see him. I think you're right with the crazy eyes. He's got that going on for him a little bit. He's just an intense individual to deal with, I feel like. And I also didn't like the way he, like, talked about her, like, she's an investment. I didn't appreciate that at all. I do think that the whole stuff with Eric-y and with Colt, like, this has definitely damaged Larissa's self-esteem. It's very evident, very, very evident, because she wants to do all these things in order to feel pretty again. We learned in these exchanges that she doesn't feel fully comfortable when they have sex. And, like, that's a thing for her as well, where, like, she doesn't feel comfortable with that. In my head, I'm like, well, is maybe Eric-y's the problem, but whatever. No, I think ultimately that she definitely, like, is very much going the other extreme of, I need to change everything about myself in order to feel comfortable in my skin, which, like, whoever wants to feel however they want in their own skin, if it makes them feel good, that's good with me. I do feel like, if I may make a prediction, Sasha, I do think that this is not going to happen. I think there's no way. Even with the, quote, interest that Eric-y thinks he's going to get, there's no way he's going to agree to do this. He's gonna bail. I think at some point he's going to be like, I'm not doing this. Because when he heard her say the other stuff at the lingerie store of, like, yeah, maybe liposuction in my thighs and my butt and, like, the stomach area, you could see that he was like, oh, this is not going to end once I start. Like, so I think he's going to not do it. This is my personal prediction. However, this was all that they gave us for their story. We didn't get anything else from this couple. It was all about Larissa's next steps in getting her surgery done. The one thing that was funny to me was when the doctor's talking about, like, the complications that can arise from the surgery, like, oh, this would be what would happen post-operation and blah, blah, blah. When Eric-y was like, oh, I did not realize that there would be more to it. I'm like, are you joking? It's surgery. Literally, there's always more to it than just the 2 hours, 3 hours the procedure is going to take. Like, there's months of recovery on your hands. Like, definitely. So, Eric-y's dumb. That's the summation.
Right. I think maybe one of the things that the producers ask is, do you use Google? And I think if the answer is no, then you get on the show.
Yeah, there's no fact checking done on the show by anybody. It's like, do you have data? No, I have minutes. You have minutes. We're signing you up right now. If you're still rocking with minutes, you're perfect for this show, because you really can't go outside of the boundaries that are provided to you by your phone company. It's very frustrating. Again, how does he have hella savings, but then no phone and has to have a phone from Larissa, but he has enough savings for two surgeries, elective surgeries? I don't buy it. There's something's got to give with Eric-y. I will say again that I know that the American counterpart in these shows gets paid weekly for each episode. Like, about, I don't remember exactly what the amount was. It might have been 1,000 per episode, then 2,500 for the finale, for like the tell-all, something of the sort. But they get paid a decent chunk of money. So the fact of the matter is, Eriki's going to get paid for this show because of Larissa. Now, is he going to pay her back in the form of surgery? I don't know if that's going to happen. But for someone who doesn't have a phone and has a fat bank account, Eriki is certainly very odd with his money. I'll say that because I feel like, and I feel comfortable saying this, Larissa's not the type of person you can date and not wine and dine.
Yes.
She definitely likes the finer things in life. So Eriki's got to like loosen the purse strings.
Yeah. And that's what I'm trying to now figure out as you say this, because I was thinking about this. Does Larissa get paid or is it, you know, still Erik that's getting the money? So now that makes a lot more sense, because I was just wondering why she's with him. I was like, you're, you know, you should do your own thing. I felt like she was on a good trajectory without him. And then when he's in the picture, or maybe any man for that matter, because I looked up a few videos of her and Colty, and it really feels like when she's with a man, like her demeanor changes. She doesn't, you know, walk as tall or take up as much space, like the internalized like patriarchy, right? Maybe that's what it is, but it's something about that makes her so submissive and so just like dumb. I don't know if that's the right word, but I feel like she's better than this. She's definitely better than Eric, because he is, I mean, he's a mess, like literally a mess.
No, big man. Like, that's the thing, is that when we got introduced to Larissa initially, she had all the, you know, energy, all the power in that relationship with Colty. And then in this relationship, for some reason, Eric was able to win by like shaming her. And with the way the breakup went, because enough that it's like caused her some like discomfort, which I didn't expect, because I always thought Larissa was going to be the, you know, who was against the queen will die mentality. And for some reason, he was able to go head to head with the queen. And now it's like a weird like balance between them where they're together. She's kind of like, he kind of has control, but then she makes all the demands. Like, I don't get their dynamic quite yet at the moment. I do also want to say that. I believe the amounts I said were true, but then I think that that's until, so for example, on a regular 90 Day Fiancé season, if there's a counterpart that's just gone there, they don't have their work document and stuff, so they can't work, so they can't get paid. But I think once they do have documentation, if they do a happily ever after, there is a chance that both parties get paid. So either way, they're both getting paid, or Eriki is for sure getting paid. So Eric's just getting money for being in this relationship, which is why I feel like he's not going to do it. There's no way. I think he's just in this for the money, to be honest.
Yeah, 100%. Because I just can't see this like happening. I can't. I am excited for the tell all, because I hope that the hosts, and they're like pushed a little bit on their relationship and why they're in it, because currently it feels a little abusive. And I agree with you that the power keeps shifting. Like, I don't think it's all Eric or all Larissa. Like, I do feel like there is like a weird tug of war of power, and they both want to be top dog, which is also causing a lot of damage for them. But it really seems like either Eric is like holding something over her that maybe we know, right? Maybe it is that he's going to call the cops, or maybe it is something we don't know yet.
Yeah. Well, what we do know is that the other side of this relationship story, which is Colt and Jess, did not go any better. If anything, they're in a worse spot than any couple on this list. And this is the most absurd one we're going to talk about today when I tell you this, Sasha. I'm just in complete disbelief, because here's the thing, right? So when we get into like a reality, competitive reality TV show, like a Survivor or a Big Brother, and there's someone who comes back for a second time, if they make the same mistakes they made the first time, or if they make mistakes the second time, it's like, you should know better. So, and I can't believe I'm saying this, Colt, you should know better, you big dummy. So here, let's talk about Colt and Jess now. So Colt has Vanessa still living in his house, last we left him. he's asked Jess to come to Vegas to see the cat slash him. And we found out that while after the Brazil trip had passed, they fought constantly. They broke up a handful of times. And in the midst of one of those breakups, Colty was talking to other women. Okay, that's what he said. That was his phrasing. And then he also lives with Vanessa. Jess doesn't know about the other women. Jess doesn't know about Vanessa. All Jess knows is that I'm coming to Vegas to see him. And his whole rationale is, I want to tell her in person in Vegas, which is a big cop out, in my opinion, because it's the anchor move of, if I do it here, she can't leave me because I'll look very sad and she wouldn't want to make me sad. So if I do it face to face, it's more likely to work.
Oof, this is like sociopathic behavior, you know?
Yes. So then he decides strategically, well, Vanessa's at my house right now. I want her to come back to my house. My plan is to meet up at the cat cafe, feel her out, give her good news and stuff. And then for the other news, go home, which I was like, I feel like there's a wrong order here. I feel like you're supposed to break the bad news at the cat cafe because there's no way you're going to have a civil conversation at your house. There's zero chance that's going to happen. So then they show up at the cat cafe, which honestly, as someone who's been to a cat cafe with their partner, great time. Great date, great time. I can't endorse it enough. So if at some point in a post-pandemic world, you can find yourself a cat cafe, do it. It's good. So then they meet up and Jess knows everything, Sasha. Jess sits down and says, how's your bleep for penis? You sent pictures today? And he was like, what? He starts blushing. She's like, I have 8 screenshots. I have 8 DMs. And Colt freezes, has no retort, and then says, let's go home and talk. So again, Sasha, I have to ask you, if you're, and may nobody ever have to be in this position, right? Let's pretend we're Colt for a second and tell me, what's your rationale for having your significant other who's mad at you, who has just found out you've pretty much cheated 8 times with 8 different women in the span of, like, let's say 3 weeks, and you're about to take her home to someone who she despises, who you said you don't talk to anymore, and your mother who doesn't like her. What's your rationale being like, hey, let's go finish this conversation there?
Basically, I don't want to get beat up in public. That's my rationale. Because what else can it be? Because I don't know if you caught that he says, I want to take her home and I think Debbie will calm Jess. He said he thinks his mom, Debbie, will calm mm-hmm. Jess. Like, he is not of this world. Like, I don't, like, yeah. This is why I believe that something's, again, not right with him, because he speaks calmly when he's talking about all the bad things he's done. Like, this is how he speaks in his confessionals. Mm-hmm. And
it's like a villain.
Yes, exactly. Like a mediocre, weirdo villain. Mm-hmm. no shade to Colt. But it's fascinating because he's gaslighting her. He just keeps deflecting, saying, she wants to humiliate me in public and I don't want to do this. So if I'm Colt, I think my idea is just that I don't want to be humiliated in public, even though there's a whole camera crew that's going to put this to millions of people later. But, you know, instant gratification. I don't want to be humiliated. Let's go do it at home with better lighting.
Yeah. And I think that that's the thing, is that he thinks that there's a bubble at home where if he's in home base, first of all, he has home field advantage. His mom's there to pick up any pieces and, like, make sure that Jess doesn't get too loud on him. But most importantly, like, this is home. Like, you're not gonna do anything here. I think he was wrong, and I think he realized that very quickly. So they get home, and first, the way I noticed him talking to her, even on the drive back, is he's very embarrassed that he got caught, and he didn't get to, because, like, it's one of those things where it's like, you know the phrase of, I wanted you to hear it from me first. He didn't get to do that. She's got proof of everything. So, and you can tell Colt's the type of guy who would have tried to, like, play it fast and loose, like he did with us in the confessional when he said he's talked to other women. He's, like, full on sent nudes to other women, and he's been engaging in textual activities with these women. So it's a little bit past what he was advertising. So I imagine he was going to come in and be like, yeah, you know, we, I kind of said, how you doing? She said, I'm good. I said, nice. And that was it, which he can't say that anymore. He can't claim that. So they get home and he, like, first of all, Jess loves the slot machine, which immediately I was like, she's lying to your face, Debbie. Larissa didn't like the slot machine. Jess doesn't like the slot machine. You're being played nice, nice. That's all it is. But then, Sasha, I this is why I'm having such a hard time with them so much that I keep pausing in the middle of recapping this, because I don't know what I want to talk about next. Is, oh, the actual conversation that went down, or the fact that Debbie got thanked for making grapes. How does one make grapes? You rinse them and put them on a plate. Like, thanks for making grapes. And then they decided to revisit the meme of the better than beef stew meme. Because, and I remember this fondly because I mess with Liana about this all the time. Debbie made beef stew and Colt loved the beef stew and Larissa did not like the beef stew. So this is one of those instances where I'm like, oh, you guys know what the fans know about you. So you're doing it on purpose. This is what it felt like. But from squashing the grapes to making the grapes, I have to ask you, would you rather drink a bottle of wine that was squished by the Floridian family that is Elizabeth's family? Or would you rather eat grapes that Debbie made with her bare hands after making a beef stew? Go.
Debbie, 100%. Debbie has no beef with me, so we're good. She's gonna make sure I'm good too. You know, but with the Libby's family, I think I will get sick. I just will. But I think if Debbie likes me, I think I'll be good. But if Debbie doesn't like me, I'm not Brazilian, so I think I have better chances, then I think I'll have a problem. But currently, Debbie's grapes it is.
I think you made the right call, if I'm being honest. So ultimately, this argument happens and she knows everything. We find out my favorite thing that's happened. It's like when two supervillains meet in a crossover movie. We're going to get the coveted Larissa and Jess meeting next episode. I'm very excited about that. This relationship is doomed to fail, right? Like, there's no way. There's no way that this is going to last. I think that the cherry on top, Sasha, was, oh, and one other thing. Vanessa lives here now. She needed a place to, and I hate how casually he says it. Like, she needed a place to stay, so she's been staying with me a couple weeks. Like, you could have phrased it so many different ways. You know, why do you have to be the alpha? Oh, she needed a place, so she's staying with me. No, she's staying with you and your mother. Be with us. This is an us house, definitely not a you house. No. So, yeah. Tell me. I don't know. I don't even know what I like. Do I think? Do I want to be like, look at the positive side? But just tell me what you're thinking about all this, because it's literally driven me to a point where I don't even know what I'm thinking.
Exactly. Yes, I agree with you. I think Jess said it best. Hollywood needs Colt. I think that's what this is, where one, they're pandering to us. I'm not mad at it. Like, it's fun to watch. And then I just don't understand how Colt can be so just like nonchalant about all of this, like literally all of this, where he's sexting people, he's doing all this craziness. And then, you know, have you seen the Ross and Rachel We Were on a Break episode? That's what Absolutely. I feel like this was, where he's like, we're on a break. Like, what's the problem? And then Jess is like, 2 weeks, 8 girls, 2 weeks, 8 girls. And then she changed to 1 month, 8 girls. But still, I think that this is so wild, because I do think Jess is hurt. And I think, again, she's not going to take the standing, like laying down, because if I was Jess, like, I don't think Colt would have been standing. Like, I would have ruined his life. Like, you're not going to step out on me, make me look like a fool on television. And this Vanessa thing is just insult to injury, where I think that Jess just didn't know what to do, I think, where she's like, am I really with this man that's just doing all this? And, you know, is it like Savior? Is it like he's a visa machine? Like, how is he getting these women? Like, that's also a question.
Yeah. Like, imagine being like flying out to another continent only to find out that the person you're there to see is literally doing everything you would want them not to be doing. Like, everything. Because it really is insult to injury to have Vanessa staying with him after he knows that she specifically does not like that dynamic, that relationship, and he's lied about it before. So, there's no saving this. Colty is and always will be a garbage person. That we already knew, and now we know even more. It's kind of like one of those things where it's kind of also like, yes, I feel very bad for Jess, but also there was evidence of this behavior on TV, and Larissa tried to warn her at once upon a time. So I feel like the writing was on the wall, but learning it this way, this is never going to happen. Like, she's definitely got the vision now for douchebaggery in the future, which I think is an important trait to have, because the world is full of them, and there are more Colties out there. I just know it.
Yep, and that's why, Jess, is the visa really worth it? That's my question to her, because this is wild.
Yeah.
And I also, like, wanted to note that I think this is the first time Debbie has left her son when Jess tries to show Debbie all the messages, and Debbie's like, oh, I gotta go, I'm out, and she just, like, runs.
Yeah. And I couldn't decide if it was I don't want to see my son sending lewd texts, or, oh, I don't want to see it because if I don't see it, I can be like, I don't believe what she's saying. Like, what came first? Which idea was there first?
Oh, 100%. Doesn't believe. Like, I don't think she cares. She'll look at the text. If it was to Vanessa, I think she would be like, yeah, here's the angle. You should do it.
Oh, God. Yeah, that's so awkward. Imagine getting advice from Debbie. Like, No. Like, she'd be like, so you get her a bouquet, and then you take her out to the casino for some slots, and then you come home and you eat a fresh beef stew. And then you put out the candles, you hang out with the kitties, and then that's the date. And no, Debbie, don't do this. Don't be a consultant. Although, you know what? That would be 10 times better than anything Colty's done for any person on this show. So maybe he should be listening to Debbie. What do I know?
Exactly. He's a trash man, as Jess says.
And from one trash man to another, because these segues are just writing themselves today, because I want to save the biggest for last. Let's talk about Trash Man Paul and his wife, Karini. Sasha, take it away.
Oh, my goodness. All right. First, I want to give Karini all the props, because we see her struggling in the last episode as well, in the last few episodes, but she's just not doing well in America, right? She's alone. She says she is desperate. She admitted it in the Uber. So she's completely dependent on freaking Paul, of all people. I'm sorry, Karini. But she's going to, you know, take matters in her own hands this episode. We love it. We needed this, I think, from someone in this 90 Day Fiancé universe. She's going to go to an immigration lawyer, and check, you know, what she can do about her situation. She's obviously going to do it behind Paul's back. So she gets an Uber herself, which seems to be also a subplot in this. You got an Uber by yourself? So she's really hustling, I feel. She's getting things done. And because I actually didn't even think about her going to a lawyer or needing to go to a lawyer. So she's already ahead of me. And she explains to the lawyer, my husband and I aren't doing well. We're fighting a lot. You know, she talked about the 2-month deadlines. Probably not going to get any results. And she wants to go back to Brazil. That's, you know, why she's with the immigration lawyer.
Yeah.
The lawyer talks about, you know, here are the laws. Like, Karini technically can travel. It's okay. There aren't necessarily any consequences if Paul agrees. And that's the big, like, dun, dun, dun. Because Paul obviously has equal rights, not just here, but in Brazil, and can take her to family court and, you know, like, really tie her up into litigation forever. So really think about this. So Karini obviously is a good partner in that way, where she doesn't want to fight or hurt her child, Pierre, and she doesn't want to be stuck here either. She like wants to, you know, be moving around and being free. So cut to the next scene where Paul, you know, just like happy-go-lucky guy, you know, like if you could put a background to him, it would be like that whistling, carefree whistling, where he comes home with the plantains and, you know, obviously came home with plantains, but no job.
Yeah.
And, you know, finally she tells him, I went to a lawyer. I mean, Paul is like, it's like record scratch. Like he is shocked. He doesn't know what to do. And then he, and this is when we, you know, she tells him what happened, that, you know, you're not really doing what I need to do or what I need you to do. So I might be leaving. So reality is setting in for Paul, where Karini might be leaving. So he starts talking about how he's providing everything, you know, a trailer park house and whatever else he's providing. I don't even know, a broke down car that he's. And he's definitely not going to let her go to Brazil. He's going to fight. He's going to prosecute in America and in Brazil. And the only sliver, don't come for me, anyone, is that she is a permanent resident and she can get a job. So I did want to make that note also that I do agree with Paul on this little bitty thing that maybe that might be another way for them to lead an okay life here. But anyway, they're not actually talking. They're just pushing each other. I feel like pushing each other's buttons and like fighting about it. And I think their situation is so dire. It's actually scary for me because how are they like paying for Pierre? How are they like giving him food and giving each other like what they need? And you know, Paul just believes, again, living in La La Land, where he believes that life will get better eventually in America. Like, and then that's like where we kind of leave them, is like Paul being like, it's going to get better. And Karini being like, where did I come?
Yeah, I so this whole sequence of events, right? First of all, Paul coming home with plantains to be like, hey, this is a reminder of home. Paul, I see right through you. I go to the grocery store once a week. Plantains are like $4 for $1. Like you are not breaking the bank on this gift. Like this is, again, to quote your own mother, you're being a bit of a deadbeat right now because you can't be like, this will cheer her up as a reminder of home. And then you open the door and there's garbage bag curtains still on the doors. Like you don't have curtains yet, my guy. Like you need this. You need, if you're going to live in this little like square, you need to make sure the square looks as best as it can. And it really does not. It's very clear that Karini's unhappy. It's very clear that this is damaging to her. Obviously the point you brought up, I thought about roasting you on it. The whole, like, well, she could technically get a job. That's just true. But also I know that that would help with like social situations, with like being out there and feeling more comfortable, but it's very clear that the language barrier is still an issue for her as well. Right. So then, but she gets an Uber, she goes to the lawyer. I liked all of that. I'm very happy when someone does the research, right? We talked about, most of these people don't know how to Google. Karini clearly Googled, found a lawyer that does have a translator and got herself a session, talked to them, found out information that will benefit her in the long run. So what I want to talk about is specifically Paul's reaction to finding out that she left. Like, why did you drive? How did you drive? Where'd you go? It kind of made me feel like he was keeping her prisoner like Rapunzel. Like it's like, oh, you're in the tower and you can't leave ever. Like, if you leave, I'll be mad. It was, like, very odd to me and, you know, a little gross. He doesn't want the baby to travel without him, which at that point, it's not my business. It's like, you are both the parents. Like, figure out what you need to do. But I do think that Karini needs to go back home to adjust. And I think similarly to how before Paul has left Brazil and to, like, make money and come back, he needs to do the same thing where he needs to let her leave so that the appreciation regrows and that he needs to show progress when she comes back, because it doesn't help. You know, it doesn't help that his attitude is so negative towards all this. Like, it's very clear that he keeps talking about, I can't get a job, when I'm like, listen, there are people that, you know, leave facilities and then have jobs in 2 weeks. You are just not trying hard enough, or you're not lowering your standards enough. You're probably like aiming for a specific job, specific field that is not available. You could very easily get a job at any, you know, food franchise, easily, I feel like. at least one of them somewhere. So I just feel like he's not trying hard enough.
Yeah, I think if you just Google Kentucky laws, or not laws, but like hiring, like who hires felons in Kentucky, there's a list that comes up. So it is possible. Mm-hmm. And again, like they don't Google, they don't do anything. But I agree with you that Paul is kind of like living in this victim mentality. And I'm wondering, is it that he wants to live in this like space so that his mom will come save him and he doesn't have to work? Because that's the only thing that makes sense to me at this point. Like, he's just almost playing the long game. Well, mom will feel bad for me and, you know, she'll start like paying for me again.
Right. Like, how long is he going to hold off until someone pays something for them? Because like that kind of does feel like is a thing that could be what they're trying to do, honestly. But like ultimately, my whole thing is I think Carini is making the right choice in trying to leave. And I know that I can see why Paul is upset, because I think Paul kind of sees the writing on the wall of there's a chance she won't come back. But I can't blame her if she chooses not to come back, simply because, you know, this is a crash course. When you're living in a long distance relationship the way the way many people are, and then you move in together out of nowhere, that is a crash course learning situation for both parties. Because, you know, going on trips to see each other it feels like a vacation each time. I'm speaking from experience here, by the way, for those of you wondering. So then when you live with each other, you learn a lot of new habits and behaviors and mannerisms that you did not see, no matter how long your relationship was, simply because you're getting like short-term hangouts, short-term stays together that are not amounting to this every day we're in the same house together vibes. It's a different vibe. So when you look around this house and you're seeing garbage bag curtains and a unemployed husband who literally his one goal has been, I'm going to go get employment, and he's just coming back with empty promises each time and is a little condescending and is clearly keeping you, holding you prisoner in a way, this is not what you want long term. This is like, now you've been together enough that you kind of see who they are. And if they've said they're going to change stuff and they haven't, then it's safe to think that that's not going to happen. So it's definitely a sad story with theirs, because I do believe they're not going to last. So I do notice that they've been showing us more of them. So hopefully they just finish it off, because I feel sad seeing them.
Sasha. Yeah, I'm ready for this to kind of play itself out, because at this point, I don't think it's good for Carini's mental health, honestly, to be in, you know, yeah, like locked up, like you said, like Rapunzel, because she is in this like prized possession that Paul just gets to enjoy when he feels like it, or, you know, when he wants to be home with her and the baby. And she's not just like, her being isn't just, you know, confined to being a mother to like this child, because eventually the kid is gonna, you know, start walking around and have more needs. And then what, you know? So I think Carini needs to go back home where she actually has a support system, because she's also so much younger than Paul. I think that is also interesting, where I think she's younger than Asuelu, right? I think she's 23 and Asuelu is 24.
She's 23. Yeah.
So yeah. I think that's also so interesting, where, you know, she's expected to grow up so quick, and she has. I really think she has, and she stepped into this role, but she needs help. Like, at 23, I don't think I could take care of a kid in another country or language I don't speak. So I really think that for her, you know, progress and her own just like sanity, she should leave. Because on her Instagram a while ago, when they were on The Other Way, last season, I saw, you know, them constantly posting like brand deals and, you know, being like an influencer. Mm-hmm. So I know that there's money coming in, but I don't think it's enough to actually get them to, you know, do anything.
Yeah. To sustain a whole family, probably not.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why I pray that, you know, this is just like wrapped up, like, and, you know, TLC washes their hands of them and just kind of moves them into a pop. Better place, maybe together, maybe separate.
Yeah, I hope so too. I really do. I think that as much as I don't want to see them on my screen again, I'd be lying to you if I didn't say that I am low-key very excited to Taryn to Paul one more time next week when he takes her to the poop facility to show her the poop water facility, to show her what the development is like in the city they're living. Because for some reason, he thinks that this is what Karini would want to see. Again, it's misread after misread. I swear, he could take her to McDonald's for a two-can-dine for $4.99 dining situation, and she'd be more stoked on that than being taken to the sewage system.
I mean, anywhere. It's Kentucky. Go to a basketball game. I don't know. Go, like, oh my God, this man, I feel like he's trolling us all because he's like, look at what I'm doing to her. Because, again, if I was Karini, I would be like, you are nothing. Like, you're literally, you ain't shit. Like, sorry for cursing, but like, yeah. This is this man. And like, in Kentucky, go to the Derby. I don't know. Not that I condone that, but still do something. This is like a mess. And at this point, I feel like he's just so, again, just him and Libby's family should be best friends because they think that America is perfect, no wrongs, you know, like I can go to a sewer plant and that's still better than anywhere in Brazil. I think that's his mindset, which is what?
That's so bad. And like, that's genuinely the way I think he thinks. I think, because here's the thing. He said the whole, like, in the long run, this is the right move for us. Sure. But recognize, please, that in the short term, while you have nothing ready here, there's a lot of sense and logic, and maybe you don't have to be here for the developmental stages of this. Like, especially if she's not working at the moment and she's just taking care of the little baby, then let her and Pierre go to Brazil where they're surrounded by family and love while you're out all day trying to look for a job. If that's what you're doing, that's kudos to you. Get a job, get the money, start saving that money, get a living situation sorted, welcome her back with open arms in a nice house. Like, you got her here. You got through the 90-day process. That's amazing. Why is this, like, the more and more you hold on to her and make her stay in a situation that's making her miserable, the less likely she is to want to come back to you when she leaves, because she's resenting you every time you put a wall up and you threaten legal action.
Yeah, I will prosecute. Like, what a line.
Yeah, I'll prosecute you with Brazilian police. Get out of here. Get out of here. Okay, let's talk about the last couple of the bunch in the Happily Ever After group. And that is, of course, everyone's favorite couple to get irritated with. And by with, I mean specifically one of them. It's Angela and Michael. Now, Angela and Michael, we start the journey with them. It's like they're getting married. This is happening now. Everything's sorted. They just need to put a little bit, a couple pieces together. Firstly, they need a bouquet and a corsage for the matron of honor. The matron of honor. Not the maid of honor. The matron of honor. So Angela wants 8 flowers. They're going to be roses with the birthstone color of her family members who are not going to be in attendance. So then the florist puts together a thing, gives a quote, and Michael's like, this is expensive. Angela says, well, I would like to cut down on food and guests then, because this is more important to me. Immediate red flag. The people who are at the wedding, treat them well. They're coming to your wedding. this bouquet is like, it's a nice gesture, but also you could easily do something else that'll be enough sentiment for you. It's a sweet thought, though, you know, but again, not my wedding, not my problem. Then literally, JoJo's coming to Texas, from Texas to the wedding. JoJo is Angela's best friend, aka matron of honor in this situation. And then on the phone, Angela talks about how she's going to tote down the aisle with a bouquet of flowers. Tote down. She loves saying the word tote in places that it doesn't need to be said. Now we're learning this about Angela too, so that's a new thing to learn. But I would like to stop right here and say, what are your views on getting a bouquet that's so expensive that you have to cut down on food options or guests?
As someone that did plan a wedding around this time last year, I will say a bouquet is not that important. Like, I'm sorry. Like, I think it needs to look nice, like, you know, for your pictures, for all of it. But like, my bouquet, I think I picked it 2 weeks before my wedding. Like, I would not recommend. Don't do that, anyone. But it was, I mean, because I thought it was nice and beautiful, but I was never going to have my bouquet be the third thing. Cause I think that's what she said, right? Like the cake, the dress and the bouquet are top three. And I just know it's really not. Like your bouquet, first, the flowers are going to die in pretty quickly. And then secondly, like in Nigeria, I don't even think they, like in a traditional Nigerian weddings, that's not even important. So she's wrong. This is a wrong read, Angela.
Yeah, very much a wrong read. But would I expect anything else from Angela? No. Because, and I can't believe I'm going to say this, things get more ridiculous from here. This is not even the start of it. So then they go to the airport to pick up Jojo. And Jojo comes out of the airport 4 minutes out and looks at Michael and says, "So far, so good. I really like it in Nigeria." I'm like, well, you've literally been in the airport. Like, how do you like the airport? Is that what you're saying? Are you doing the inverse Chuck and Charlie where you actually like the airport and are judging it positively, whereas they like completely crapped on Moldova based on the airport? Maybe. I don't know. But then we find out that they're going to have a bachelor / bachelorette party. It's a joint occasion because, and we've been new, Angela does not trust Michael around other women and does not trust that their bachelor party is going to be on the up and up, which we find out that it was right because they were going to have a bachelor party with strippers and, you know, regular bachelor party fare to what I believe movies and TV have made me realize are the case, right? So they're going to have a party with Michael's friends, herself, and Jojo. She gets, you know, she gets the traditional bachelorette party, like, bride-to-be sash. She's ready to go. They go to a, they're going to a party, okay? So they pull up, they go inside, and I think this was more like a nightclub with like a strip club attached to it, is what I would describe it as, because there were definitely poles at this party, at this club. And Angela nearly has a fit right away, but then goes, no, I'm gonna be positive. I'm gonna walk in, we're gonna have fun, it's our night, whatever. But then warns Michael, do not look at anyone else but me, which is a good gesture, you know, is a good thing to think of, but also like he's there to, you know, it's his bachelor parties. It's supposed to be there with his friends. You're there with your best friend. Like that's the whole point of this. And it doesn't take too long for her to notice that Michael looked at someone's butt for a little too long. And she freaked out on him, did what Angela does all the time, and decided, hey, I'm walking out. This wedding's over. I'm going home. Let's go home. So they leave, and she's like lost her mind over this completely and is just not happy. Also, what I'm leaving out in the middle is that before this blowout happened, they were having fun. She brought little like tiara glittery hats with penises on them for everybody in the party. Michael was wearing one, his friends were wearing one, and then we got a montage of her throwing it back to Michael and dancing with Michael, which I'll be honest, I could have gone without seeing, but I, you know, I do what I gotta do to cover the show for everyone. So if anything, I'm a team player. I'm a team player. Sasha, what did you think about this unconventional bachelor-bachelorette party?
First hot topic, maybe, I don't know, but I don't think you should have bachelor and bachelorette parties together. Like, I think that's all bad.
Cold take. This is a very cold take because I 100% agree with you.
Yeah, as someone, again, my bachelorette party, I think, was the most fun I had in that year of wedding planning. So, and I, like, I love my husband, but I don't want it to be together. Like, it's just not, no.
Well, like, the whole reason, the whole theme of a bachelor / bachelorette party is we're going to spend our lives together. This is like one night of, this is what our life, the, this is a summary of what my life was prior. It's like closing a chapter in a way. Exactly. It's like a rite of passage.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's why, one, why are you marrying someone that you can't even trust to go to the club once? Right? That's the first question. And then secondly, I agree with you on the Angela, like, dancing and wilding out with Michael, because I just, I didn't need it. I really didn't need it. But I love Angela. I really do. I think I'm going to get a cameo from her because she's so wild. But I think that it meant well. Like, I think everyone was like, oh, I think we're going to have fun. Like, we have, you know, the mm-hmm. like sash and blah, 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 all of these things. And then I think alcohol happened. And then Angela is not a good drunk. Yeah. Like, there are people that I also change when I get drunk. I like become actually more loving and like nicer, I feel. But Angela is not that. So it's really funny to see Angela like, you know, because like just be like, why did you look? Well, it's a train wreck. How do you not look at someone dancing on a pole, right? Like I would look. I think everyone would look. I think that's the most normal reaction. Because she, I think, wanted Michael to have, you know, those horse blinders? Like, I don't know if you've seen them, but that's what she wanted him to have. And, like, laser focused on her. Like, let this man live a little bit. That's how I feel.
No, I'm 100% with you. I feel like, you know, if your husband was a Colty type, where Colty's got a bad rep, or we'll talk about him later, Tim Cheesestick, where you've had reasons to doubt his, like, not trust him, then maybe, like, you need to, like, be worried. Michael's legitimately probably the nicest and most patient man I've seen on 90 Day Fiancé. Like, the things he has to deal with, the fact that this relationship keeps getting broken off every, you know, time, left and right. Why are you, like, why are you even, I just can't with Angela, honestly. So now she's like threatening to break off this wedding once again. Whoop-dee. I'm not even shocked anymore that this is happening. At some point, I'm like, just end. If you're going to end, just end it. Like, let's just move on from it. We don't really get a next time on for them. So I have reason to believe that we're taking a pause from Michael and Angela next week, which I'm okay with because it's been a lot of, oh, things went well. Oh, no, we're breaking up now. Oh, things are good again. Oh, but at the end of the episode, we're breaking up again. So I'm ready to hit snooze on them a little bit, especially because I do think that within the next couple episodes we see them, they're going to get married. So there makes sense why we're not going to see them next week, probably.
Yeah, I agree. I think she's all talk. Like, she's not going to leave him, period. Like, there's no way. So that's why I think this is all, like, again, her just acting up because she's drunk or, you know, whatever, because other times she's not drunk. And yeah, I think Michael is so kind. In a few episodes ago, I just loved how she yelled at, she's screaming, saying, well, why are you yelling? And he's like in a calm tone, just saying, Angela, I love you. Like, no, I want to make this work. So Michael, I feel for you, man.
I have taken the liberty to look up Cameo after you brought up that you might want to get one from her. So you've not looked at Cameo in a minute, have you? Because I want to ask you a trivia question.
No, I haven't. Not in a little bit.
Okay. How much do you think an Angela Cameo costs?
So I got one for my husband from Lil Scrappy, who's on Love & Hip Hop, and he was about 50. So Angela, 35, 40?
Incorrect. And here's the thing. Here's the caveat, okay? So Angela is tied with someone else on the 90 Day Fiancé list of people at the highest Angela. Price possible. Of 75. Okay. Oh. So the other person that's tied up first with her is a package deal. It's Tim and Veronica as one cameo. Wow. So for one Angela cameo, you're spending 75 when you could be paying. There's so many people that you could be getting for that price of 75. If you went like, it's one of those memes of, hey, you have $10. Who are you getting for your squad? Because you can easily get, Let's see. So you can get Maria from Before the 90 Day, the elusive Maria, the Where is Carmen San Diego of the franchise for $25. You can get Ariella of Ari and Binium for $30. Boom, that's two people now. You can get Binium for $30.
Ooh, yes.
So you can get each of them, one of each of them for $60 and still have $15 left over. So it's pretty wild that Angela rates herself as 75, but then also my one other question to you is Big Ed is on here. How much do you think a Big Ed can
He must be like 100 at least, because He gets a lot of airtime, and he's on also that meme show, right? B90 Strikes Back. That one. Yeah. So I think maybe 100, because Chrissy Teigen tweets about him too. So I think he's like well known ish.
He's, what's it called? He is, not the most expensive. Oh. Angela's the most expensive. Oh. He's the second most expensive. And this is how you know Big Ed is a big meme. He's valued at $69 because of course he is.
Come on, sir. Of course.
One of my least favorite things is browsing TikTok and then bumping into Big Ed cameos on TikTok where like someone's like, oh, is that Big Ed from 90 Day? It's like, why are you here? Why have you found me? Oof. Once again.
They really push him. Like, I think like TLC is like, no, we love this. And they're just really wanting to get eyeballs on this man. But I'm really sad about Angela's cameo. Oh, I can't. 75, girl, no. You're doing too much.
Yeah, it's like, it's a lot. Like, 75 is a big chunk of money to put through. Oh, actually, I found another one that's more expensive. Muhammad from 90 Day is $90.
Yeah, they lost their minds. Like, this is where it's like, yeah, I need you to come back to reality. Like, not reality show, like reality.
Like, you are not that important for me to get a cameo from. There are so many more things out there I could be doing with that money.
Exactly.
Yeah. No. No thank you from that. Okay, that's enough about the cameos. I mean, it's the perfect way to end the happily ever after portion of this podcast. Because the next part is going to be a little bit shorter, but it's also going to be as much, if not more, ridiculous. But before we go to the next one, we're going to take a quick break and listen to these messages.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And we are back. And you know, when we're back, it means that it's time to break down The Other Way. Now, The Other Way, we found out this episode, Sasha, where this is the last episode we're getting until October. I was blindsided by this. I did not see this coming. So starting next week, team, we're still having a 90-day podcast. That's happening. But we're going to be one pod light. We're going to be talking only Happily Ever After until then. Maybe this is where I start giving the Stacey and Darcy show a look, or the Before the 90 Day Strike Back a look, so we have a little bit more to talk about, potentially. What do you think about that?
I am so sad. I actually, like, was the Pikachu meme, you know, when I saw the October 11th date. I was like, what do you know? What? And I actually went and looked at my calendar because I thought I had the dates wrong. I thought, like, we are already in, like, mid-September, and, you know, it's like we're getting a two-week break or something. And then I Googled it, and they're saying it's the mid-season finale. And, like, what?
Right. Mid-season? So there's 14 more episodes?
Oh, my God.
I remember looking at the schedule for the other 90-day The Other Way season just to see how long it lasted. Because when I was trying to schedule out this podcast, I was trying to figure out, okay, how many weeks are left? What's the timetable looking like? I did not expect this to be that long if this is indeed a mid-season situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I don't think we need that much more.
And here's the thing. I love 90 Day. We can't get enough of it over here. But also, does it need to be that much? Like, the first season with the tell-alls was 22 episodes. So either this is going to be about the same amount of episodes, going to come close to a 2022, which then it's like, it's kind of a mid-season, but also it's just a break so they can, you know, space out the content since the pandemic is preventing them from recording right now. That's certainly possible, because this pushes, essentially, it gives them an additional month of pause. And then they have a month post this to have more content out there. But also, they could have just found a way to extend the season. So,
yeah, I agree, because in Devin and Jihoon's next time on or whatever, you see them wearing masks with the coronavirus. So actually, I think that might be more true, that it's because of Corona that they had to shut down production.
Yeah, I have a feeling that that's going to be a part of it. That's going to be a part of it. It is interesting because this is once again the second time where we've seen the coronavirus and the pandemic be addressed in the form of a teaser. Both times it's been Devin and the kids. No one else in the cast is being shown having to deal with the virus. So I wonder if there's a specific reason why they focused in on her. Is this potentially they got the footage from her first and then that's when they shut down and they don't really have footage from the pandemic from anyone else? I don't know. I really don't.
Yeah, I think she has a YouTube channel, so she probably was recording for herself, so that actually makes sense.
Well, where do we want to start with the other way, Sasha? Who do you want to talk about first in this great cast of dysfunctional people?
Since I didn't get to talk about them last time, I wanted to talk about Tim and Maylisa. Sorry. because this whole situation, I was like, I need to get off this roller coaster because no one's making sense. So I wanted to start with them. Cheesecake Tim, Cheese Stick Tim, Cheating Tim, whatever we call him, is trying to find a job. I'm, again, still shocked in a good way. Props to you for speaking Spanish so well. He's saying he needs to find a job. The person he's speaking to, I think it's a lawyer, right? Or the job placement person says, you know, you need to find someone to sponsor you or your job needs to sponsor you. So again, don't these people know that it's impossible to work anywhere in the world without a work visa? But it's okay, whatever. So right. Tim, you know, says, okay, this sucks. Meet Maylisa for, I think, dinner. And they're starting to talk about this. And again, he says, I feel like every other person in the world knows, but it's okay. If they were to get married, it would make it easier for him to find a job. But she's not having it. Like, she's just not having it. She said she's not going to jump into a marriage with him, with someone she doesn't trust. So I already was really confused as to why Tim moved, if they're not getting married. But here we are. Mm-hmm. And then, Tim, you know, talks about how he's nervous because he's obviously has no job and is running out of savings. And to obviously further his credibility, why does he do this? He says, I still have my job back home. And I didn't know what to do. Like, I was like, why? Why would you say this, even if it were true? And I mean, she was going to kill him, right? Like, her look, like, she just dagger eyes onto him.
Yeah.
And she's obviously mad because she wants Tim to take this seriously. But it obviously feels like he has an escape route. And I understand why Maylisa is frustrated. Like, I hear her. And it's also frustrating because she's doesn't want to marry him. She is saying that she is sacrificing things and he isn't. And it's like a constant back and forth about she's feeling like he's not recognizing the sacrifices she's made because they're going against her family. She's going against her family by being with him. And then we hear that in the tell, I guess that's later, but that she hasn't been completely honest with him either.
Yes. their whole relationship to me is, I believe it was one of the Before the 90 Day seasons, Patrick and Miriam, if you recall. Mm-hmm. So the way their relationship was formatted was Patrick ends up going to France to meet up with Miriam, and Miriam was dating someone else. And this entire relationship was very, very much, very quickly obvious as a money grab of, we just wanted the appearance. Because here's the thing. Tim and Melisa got introduced to us relatively late into the season. There was also another couple who, I don't remember any of their names, but she was seeing this Algerian guy and wanted to go to Algeria, but then he didn't have the paperwork ready. And that whole storyline was like, she wanted to go see him, but couldn't. So for me, why are you on the 90 Days franchise if there's no marriage on the table? Then this is not 90 Day the other way. This is literally not. This is, I'm going to see if we can work it out, right? The storyline isn't that compelling to me. The fact that Tim straight up has a backup plan in the form of, I kept my job just in case, is smart, but also deceitful if you're not telling Melisa that you're doing this, especially when your relationship's on the ropes because of your dishonesty. So that is something that I think, I understand why he kept the job as a backup, but the fact that he didn't share it with her is the big problem, right? Again, the frustrating part of, like, people not realizing, this is, as someone who holds an Iranian passport, I, believe me when I know that I have to research every country I visit or I want to visit or anywhere I want to go, because there are so many restrictions. I've had to apply for every country I've gone to, have to apply for extensive visa process. So I don't have the privilege of just flying to a country. That's not really a thing. There's, like, I think 6 countries I can do that with. So it is frustrating to me when some people are like, I could just walk in and get a job. Right? It's like, no, like, there's literal formalities you have to go through. So to move to the country again, the whole not Googling thing is bothersome. Yeah. Especially when he clearly, like, grasped the language well and has good control of that and has moved. I just can't fathom moving and not preparing yourself for a move. You know, it's just, you have to have that in your back pocket at the very least. So all of this to be said, for me to say that I still think this is not a real relationship. Mm-hmm. I think that this is not going anywhere. It really feels like a paycheck gig for me, from them. It really does. I don't know where they go from here, because now we find out that she's hiding things from him. How is that going to go? I mean, Cheese Stick knows 2 things. Talking in the voice and accent that he has that's unique to him, that Daniel does a good impression of from last week, and telling people that he's cheated on Melisa. So what happens once he realizes, or he's told, whatever Melisa's hiding? Like, did Melisa do something with someone? Is that what it is? Because then that gets ugly, because now it's like, it does look like Tim has been very vulnerable and, like, the doorknob in the relationship, which rightfully, if, like, he's cheated, he should be. But then if she's also cheated, now they're kind of an equal footing, only he's humiliated himself in front of everybody and has just been taking, like, verbal beatdowns from everyone that meets him. So now he's like, is he in the right at this point? Then what happens? Like, I mean, they're both awful if that's what's happened, but, like, I don't know.
Yeah, that's exactly how I was feeling, where it was, again, like a tennis match, right, of who's worse at this point. Like, that's what it feels like. Oh, okay, I lob it to you, now you lob it back to me. But it's, for Melisa, if she wasn't going to marry him, why make him move? Because why dating doesn't make sense. If you're going to date him, then you have to have different expectations of, like, that he's not going to have a job. And, you know, like, and all of that is okay, too. Sure. But to me, it's like, it's hypocritical that you're requiring so much of him, but not giving him anything.
So much. Yeah. Like, I just don't know. I can't with them. Cause, like, the thing is, I've been a big Melisa fan this entire time. And I'm like, you're in the right. Like, I think marriage shouldn't be on your mind given all the information, you know, just cause he moved doesn't mean it's a license for the relationship to be automatically fixed. Like, you got to move at the pace you're comfortable with. But if she's done stuff now that she's been hiding from him, now you're a hypocrite. And now I don't like that. Like, if you're both trash, you're both trash. But if one of you's trash, the other one, like, you know, it's deceit. Again, the lies and deceit in this couple is astronomical. Like, I'm not into it at all. I can't believe we've talked as much as we have about Cheese Stick and Mabel. I thought they didn't have any storyline coming into this, but look at us.
I know, but here we are. We can move on from them, you know. Bless this mess, well, as we say.
Exactly. I mean, to be honest, I'm looking at my notes and there's like two other couples that I have less notes on than I do them. So let's talk about one of the ones I have less notes on. They had a relatively quiet week this week after a big week last week. It's Kenny and Armando here. So Kenny and Armando's whole story this week was they're dealing with the fallout from the night before, where they were met with homophobic slurs from a passerby. Yeah, I think that works.
Yeah.
They had to deal with that in front of his daughters. He was he wasn't too upset. He's obviously disheartened, but he was more upset for Armando because Armando was just getting comfortable with like expressing himself in public, and he thinks that this is going to damper that. But then also now his daughters are leaving. He's very emotional about it, but the big setup is they're going to go pick up Hannah and meet Armando's family. This is literally all we got from them, with the little like next time on, or sorry, I shouldn't say next time on, continuing this October on 90 Day Fiancé, we've got the dad seemingly is not going to want to see him. So that's not going to be good. And then the other thing we saw is that potentially they can't get married. Because we saw one scene with like a legal person that wasn't fully explained. But what are your thoughts on the Kenny and Armando saga?
Yeah, I think this is what we had talked about when I was on the podcast last, right? Like, I think their relationship is good, but all these other factors are now going to start like putting pressure on their relationship. And I think, again, Armando hopes that, you know, he has a supportive family. And I think that might be causing a lot of stress as well, because I think Kenny was doing well, trying to be supportive of him in that car ride, you know, trying to validate his fears, which, again, I loved how grown up that conversation was. Like, it's an actual real one.
Oh, my God. What a welcome change.
I know. So I loved that. And I think, you know, almost juxtaposition that with Kenny's family, right? Like saying all these beautiful things about, you know, it's okay that we're leaving because you're about to get another daughter. So I think that might take a toll on Armando. And internally, I don't think necessarily even anything Kenny has done, but I think their realities are so different that what Armando hopes isn't what's happening, right, for himself and his family. So I think next week that might be a bigger issue than it is now, but I think they're almost sowing those seeds for us.
Yeah, I feel the same way as well. I think they're going to have a stronger second half of show than they've had so far. I think their story has kind of taken a backseat to a lot of the annoying fluff that we're getting from the other couples, but I do think we're gonna see more from them in the future. I'm keen to find out what happens. I've talked about this from the first time we talked about them on this podcast with Daniel and Sam. I'm rooting for them. I want them to be, if anyone's getting a happily ever after, I hope it's them. They bring me much joy, but we just have to wait and see, wait it out, see how it goes. They've made us the next time on the continuing this October has made me think that we're supposed to feel like it's not going to work out, which then makes me feel like, are you trying to give me reverse psychology and it does work out? Because that's maybe what it is. I'm choosing to take that path, Sasha.
Oh, yeah. I think this is like they're in it for the long run. They're so grown up and like it actually is working and they're smart and they, you know, speak correctly to each other. I think Kenny needs to learn Spanish. That's the only like knock against this. But I it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. And I truly hope that they, you know, get something bigger after this and their relationship gets bigger and nicer after this.
Yes, please. I would take an order of that. Exactly. But until I can, let's talk about another couple here. Who do you wanna talk about here?
Should we do another short one with Brittany and Yazan?
Might as well. That was the next short one on my list. So there we go.
Great. So we see Brittany leaving for Chicago. That's like the big setup for this one. Why Chicago, you ask? Because she used to live there when she filed for divorce, apparently, with her mom. So the divorce hearing is scheduled in 3 days and it's happening there. So she hasn't obviously told Yazan the truth. She's just telling Yazan that her sister is having a baby and she really wants to, you know, go see her family. And, you know, between the like, I miss yous and all the lies, Yazan is finally sad, I think. And I feel like we saw a different side of him where he's really sad about her leaving and his confessional is about a weird feeling. I wonder why. And he feels like she may be lying or playing games. And he's also asking her, like he asked her a few times, I feel like you're not going to come back. I feel like you're not going to come back. And again, in his confessional, he's talking about how the relationship might not survive. So I want to know, you know, do you think that the production set this up? Like, is this a later on thing that, you know, they just kind of inserted that confessional in here? Or is he really foreshadowing what's going on or what's going to happen?
I don't know, because this was very weird. Remember, it was like, I was about to say a couple weeks ago, maybe a month ago, where we saw scenes of him talking about his family talking about, well, you can't, like, waiting till how long? Like, why do we like waiting is, we can't do that. It has to happen soon. And then it was like, oh, well, her dad's going to come in. So her dad's going to be here. That's the thing. And then now no one's questioning that she's just flying out. Like, with it, literally, she gets information that her hearing is in 3 days and she already has a ticket back. And my whole thing was, I wanted to see the way she broke the news to him. We didn't see that. All we saw was, I'm leaving now, which I'm bummed because she's got to have been able to, like, finesse this guy so that he doesn't question, so that the family doesn't question it. I think, to answer your question, this is a situation where I think they both kind of know this isn't going to happen. It's not going to last. I think there's just the religious differences and the religious expectations are so big that there's not enough love in between them to compensate and cause a well, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, when two people agree on
compromise,
something.
Yeah.
Compromise. Mm-hmm. There we go. Yeah, thank you so much. That would have bothered me all podcasts. There's not enough love there to get a compromise sorted. There just isn't. So I don't know about the fancy editing. If they've like decided to take something from the, I do think it's one of those things where once she left, he's kind of like, I don't know if we're going to survive this. We did see in the future preview that they're going to have a battle of ultimatums where she's going to dish one to him. He's going to dish one to her. It's going to get messy. They did recap again this episode of the whole fallout with the bikini photo being controversial. So I think it's going to be something of that nature again, Sasha, if I'm being honest, because now that the family's met her and now they're both gone back to social media, like, relationship, the family's going to have a closer eye on her social media than they did before. So they're going to probably see stuff they don't like. They're probably going to complain to him about it. He's probably going to call her and be mad about it. And she's going to be like, I'm not changing. Tough. That's not happening. I think this is the beginning of the end. Let's make a personal wager. Do you or call out something, because we might have the same answer. Do you think she's going to go back to Jordan again? Yes or no?
Yes, I actually do think she will.
Ooh. Interesting. I have a feeling she won't. So we're going to be on opposite sides on this one. And I don't know why. I mean, you know, logically, I should look at the format and be like, hey, if there's like another 8-10 episodes, then she should have time to go back one more time. She should go back one more time. But I don't know why. I have a feeling that that's not going to happen. Or maybe if she goes back, this is when she goes back with her dad.
Yeah, because if you see the whenever in the future this happens, it's a translator telling her that they want, people are trying to kill Yazan.
Oh my God, yeah. You're right. I forgot about that. Okay,
that's why I think you're she's right. gonna go. That's why, like, for sure she's gonna go back, because Yazan is right there.
Yeah.
So yeah, she's going back. Again, I agree with you on the finessing. I want to see how she finesses them then and how she finessed him now into leaving.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if it's like I'm a podcaster and I look closely at internet feedback. But how dumb are these couples? Of like, here's the thing. Here, like, Colt did this with Jess, and now we're seeing this happen with Yazan and Brittany here, where they're doing the I'm about to get away with murder here. Like, my divorce is going to happen, so I might not even have to tell the family that. Like, in what world do you think someone's not going to find out because they've been watching the show that their son or cousin or brother or like someone they know is on TV, they're going to watch it. So I feel like you should know better, Brittany, that this is definitely going to come out. It's going to get messy, especially if you anticipate a, you know, bright future for the two of you. But I did forget, and I'm very happy that you called this out. We are going to get, when we come back, this is probably going to get interesting with them, because we're going to get a segment or a series of segments where we're hearing the words, they're going to murder him, about Yazan. I don't know what's going to happen that's going to have people against Yazan to the way they are, but it's going to get messy. Messier than what we thought was possible.
Yeah, and I don't know if this is true or not, but I think that all the truth is going to come out, and they might, you know, ask him to do X, Y, and Z, whatever they want it to happen. And I think he'll either say no, or he'll say, I still love her, you know, some version of that. And I think that's going to escalate all of this, like, I could kill you situation.
I think so too. I definitely think so too. It's going to get a lot worse before it gets any better, and it's already in a bad spot. So
yes.
All we can hope is that it provides more TV content, and I think we're going to get that. I don't think Brittany's going to go into this second half quiet. So I'm very excited about that.
Yes, and I need the producers to like catch all of that.
Same. So then to move on to one of the other couples that we had more from, I'll go with, again, the one of the three that's the least, like, we got the least info out of, okay? So we're going to go to Ji-hoon and Devin. We're going to go to South Korea for this one. So it's Devin. Okay, I was about to say it's Devin. Yes, Devin and her mom go into a tea shop. It's Devin's mom's last day, Alicia. It's her last day in Korea right now. So they leave Ji-hoon alone with the kids. Immediately, we get the funniest cutscene ever, where she's like, I wonder, he's not going to survive them. And then it pans away and Drusilla's just pummeling Ji-hoon with punches. And he's like, don't hit me. And she's just hitting him. And then there's another scene later on where Alicia's like, don't jump on the bed, Drusilla. Don't jump on the bed. And she's just jumping. Drusilla gives zero Fs. Drusilla doesn't care who's there. Drusilla's the queen of the house. If anything, once Drusilla's old enough, we need to follow Drusilla's life, because I think it's going to be very interesting.
Yes, Drusilla literally is the most unique, like, character on these shows, because, she, like, literally she does what she wants, zero discipline, and I think growing up, right, being on a reality TV show, that's going to add so much more drama to her life.
Yeah.
Poor Drusilla.
I'm very excited for more Drusilla in the future. So then, basically, she's leaving. That's kind of the biggest thing here. She's leaving. Goodbye. She's very worried, obviously, about leaving Devin. But the important thing is that what I want to talk about, the whole credit card debacle. So Devin says, well, who are you talking to? He's like, oh, my mom. She needs the credit card back. And it's like, why do you have it? Oh, I need it to pay for gas. This is one of those things that you don't want to see with someone like Ji-hoon, who's promised, he's in the Paul situation where he's promised an improved life in like a given deadline. And I think that by showing weakness like this, by having the card for something as small as gas, is reason for concern. I think that this is foreshadowing that they are going to have problems. I think that the problems with Ji-hoon's mom are far from over. She's going to give them a hard time. I already know this. I feel this. And I think that the next time on, what they showed us was Devin asking Ji-hoon if he's cheated before, because she's saying that there's gotta be more to this, which I don't know how we're going to get there, but I'm excited to see it. What are your takes on these two and where we're leaving them here?
Again, I don't know why Devin decided to stay without her mom, because I don't believe Ji-hoon has changed. It's so obvious, right, that he hasn't changed. The only change we got is like him being happy that Alicia was gone. Like, I feel like I saw a different Ji-hoon in that confessional. But outside of that, like, as soon as one mom leaves, the other mom calls and starts all this crazy, mm-hmm. you know, and now they're going to start another drama. And how does he have time for cheating? That's the big one I want to know.
Yeah.
Because how do you have the money to cheat? How are you, again, is your parents like supplying you, you know, unlimited cash to take people out on dates? Like, what is going on?
I don't know. I do not know how these couples, again, you know, the Google theory, how do you get to where you are in a relationship, in starting a family, without any of the foundations built? Like, again, we know that this is like an Airbnb rental type accommodation they're staying at. So what happens when this runs out? Where are you going? What's the plan? If you have to borrow money for gas, something tells me you do not have the money put aside for other stuff. So we'll see, Sasha. We'll see where this goes. I'm nothing but scared for this couple, to be honest. And then we saw the masks foreshadowing mm-hmm. with them. They're definitely going to get their, we're going to get their COVID story. So we'll see how all that goes. The other thing I did like about this scene, because I think for whatever reason, Ji-hoon is still the comedic relief, the comic relief of this show, because when he talks about Alicia leaving, he hits us with a nice.
Yeah.
He's very happy that she's gone. So that's good for him. Let's see if he proves himself now with Alicia not looking at him. Because I think the other thing is, when someone's constantly monitoring you, you have a hard time being normal, being yourself, and being your best version of yourself. So maybe this is where he proves us wrong. Very skeptical on it, but we'll see.
Yeah, I agree. I just think that they need to, again, this is another one that I'm like, just wrap it up. Like, it's done. Like, why are you still trying?
Yeah. Well, I think that at this stage, mm-hmm. we need to go forward. Which of the two remaining couples did you want to talk about?
I think we can, I don't know if this is the big one, so, but Jenny and Sumit, I love them. So I'm happy to talk about them. There was a lot going on here. So, I feel like, I don't know how you felt watching this, but I definitely felt like all over the place because I was trying to take notes as they spoke. And I don't think we've ever gotten so much information from these two before.
No, I do feel like for the longest time this season, because I think in their first season, they were the stars mm-hmm. of the show. I felt like they were the main couple we were following for the most part. They were the ones we got introduced to first. Their story was compelling. This season, they've kind of fallen to the wayside because I feel like we've not seen them. We've seen them the least in episodes, if that yes. makes sense. Like, there's definitely less episodes with them on it. And then when we see them, it's like far and few in between. This was kind of their meats and potatoes episode. But I guess, can we talk about this? Like, they met her in 2013.
Yes. And that is like really what floored me because mm-hmm. they talk about Jenny's first visit. We even see pictures of Sumit's mom with Jenny. And you hear about how Jenny's lived with his parents for 4 months.
4 months.
Which again, what? But Sumit's and cut to Sumit's parents where they thought she was coming for a few weeks. But she stayed with them for 4 months and they believed that they were just friends. And, according to Jenny and Sumit would sneak around and they'd be intimate. And, you know, Jenny's grin really just sent to me, versus, you know, the same story is told by the parents where mom thought that they were friends they were just friends. And dad was like, no, I saw them talking. They talked a lot. I knew something was up. So mm-hmm. it looks like the parents either like ostriched, right? Where like they buried their head in the sand and thought if they just did that, it would be okay. Or Jenny and Sumit are just like really that clueless. I think it's a little bit of both. So that's the first almost like nugget of information we get about this relationship. is that, yeah, that this was happening. And then I think after that, we get to see like a sweet moment with Jenny and Sumit where they're actually talking about their love and, you know, they really like care about each other. And Sumit again doesn't want to pick between his two like big loves, right? Where he doesn't want to pick between his family or Jenny, because they made him pick and it was all bad. Because,
yeah,
again, I don't know if you noticed in the, you know how when they showed up to the parents' house, the production team, and they were showing us pictures in the house, if you saw a mug and it was Sumit with another woman with their face blurred out.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think that must have been his wife.
Yeah, I think so, too. It's very funny how, with regards to this relationship, this is because this was a very shocking episode for me, because this is the first time across two seasons we're meeting the people that we've heard about. So what we've heard about his family is that they're vicious. They were able to just barge in and collect Sumit like they were part of like an evil corporation and they kidnapped him. So they were able to just do that and leave her alone. She was mortified. And now that we sit with them and we talk to them, and they seem nice. Like, they seem civil. They don't seem like they're, you know, gung-ho about doing anything ridiculous. I do want to note that they were very much against the age gap. So much so that I think I have a bad feeling about when they go meet the parents. I have a feeling this conversation is not going to go where Sumit wants it to go. But I think the other thing that we did not know, outside of the 2013, outside of the, like, learning that they're clearly still hung up on the first relationship because they kind of picked the partner out for Sumit. So looking at it, I think their biggest thing is that the lying that went on with Sumit and Jenny in the beginning, right? With the whole, like, because, like, she's staying in their house for 4 months. That's one thing. Saying that, oh, it's a friend of mine that wants to see India, that's another thing. But then, you know, as the offspring of a brown family, I would like to speak on this and be like, if I'm at my parents' house, there's certain things, like, I don't carry myself in their house the way I do in my own house. You know, like, I'll give you an example. My dad is not a fan of drinking. I don't drink when I'm at their place ever. And I don't go out to drink if I'm staying with them. Just because, like, it's like a respect thing. It's like, it's your house, your rules. I appreciate it. So to do, for lack of a better term, hanky panky with Jenny when they're clearly not wanting that under their roof.
Oh,
it's, there's something, you know, I can see why they already are not into her. And this is not even counting the age gap. Like, definitely understand the parents on this one a little bit, even though I think they're being harsh on, you know, keep with the whole like age thing being an issue.
Yeah, I agree. Listen, I'm Indian and like it was stressful to watch this because my mom would like murder me. Like, I mean, honestly, because if I don't think, I mean, I would never dare, like, I just wouldn't to sneak around. I actually never snuck around even in high school, but because I was just too scared. But I can't imagine when my mom goes to bed that me going to someone to like another room to do anything, even to sleep, forget anything else, even to sleep. I don't think I could do it if my mom told me no. Even now, I'm 29 years old, and like when my husband, who wasn't, like, we were dating at the time, like, he slept in a different room, and like, I wasn't gonna say anything. The joke is that we lived together in San Francisco, but when we went back home to Oklahoma, we were not sleeping in the same room, and that's the rules of the house, and that's okay. So it was. Right. It was wild. And that's why I really empathized with Sumit's parents, because I think it's probably a lot for them to even have her stay in the house, even if it's a friend, because who is this random person you met on Facebook that wants to come see India? And then you're saying all of this stuff. And then now you're, you know, I'm sure they were not slick about it. Like, it was probably super obvious that they were doing all, like, doing whatever. So I understand that the parents are frustrated and the parents are like, well, we, you know, did all of this for you. And like, here's how you treat us. And Sumit's a mom with the line of the century, right? You should love him like a son, not not like a partner. And and that's really like the crux of all of this.
Yeah, it was very awkward to hear that line. And I think that because, like, you know, I've been on this podcast talking about them and saying how, you know, Sumit, why do you care about what your family thinks? Like, why does it matter that, oh, it's what they decide. Like, it's their opinion. What will, cause like the whole, like we talked about this in the episode you did, Sasha, the whole, what would the others think? What would our family think? You know, the infamous line that you said that I know Hasan Minhaj said in his stand up as well. Yes. Which is like, I'm a very firm believer of it. If you love someone, if you want to be with someone, whoever else is against it, that's their problem. So I'm echoing the same thought here. But all I'm saying is that now, having seen the family and hearing how the origins were, I fully understand why they're against this, because it's very, because like, here's the other thing. What, so they met in 2013 and this stuff was going on. What the obvious question needs to be is, when was he married? And how long was he married at the time? And did the marriage happen right after this Jenny stuff? Or was he married during the Jenny stuff? Because this definitely is no longer a thing of like, he met her like during his wedding, marriage. This has been going on for a minute. Mm-hmm. So it's just deception from, because Sumit has obviously been hiding stuff from them to not hurt their feelings. But hiding stuff is hurting their feelings. So he can't have it both ways. He's hurting them no matter how he looks at it. But he went the way of, it's more disrespectful way of hurt, which is, I'm just not going to tell you about it, and I'm going to lie to you about it.
Yeah, I also don't know exactly when he got married, but I actually, it makes, in my brain, it makes logical sense that they probably saw what was going on with Jenny, and they were like, something isn't adding up. We're going to get him married. I think that's probably what happened, and that happens a lot in India. Like, it's the truth. And I think folks in New Delhi are a little more conservative, even though it's a bigger city. So that actually all adds up, that Sumit just wasn't strong enough. He isn't strong enough, because not to like jump, but in the, again, the future, whenever the teaser, we hear him laugh at Jenny, say, well, I'm not going to pick between my parents or you, or I'm not going to let go of my family. So I think Sumit needs to grow up, because he's so extra with his like sad, sappy self. Where I don't know if you like noted him, you know how he's walking on the street like a distraught Bollywood star, like hands with his, you know, hands going through his hair. And I'm like, what? Like, this is probably how you get kidnapped, walking on the street alone, because what are you doing? So that's why I think that Sumit needs to pick a side. Like, Jenny has come here and done all this stuff for you, and now you're like trying to, you know, make peace, but it's so obvious that the parents aren't gonna like agree with it. They want grandkids, and that's their hope, and it doesn't look like obviously Jenny's gonna fulfill that hope for him. So I think fundamentally, again, there's so many issues that I can't imagine Sumit not taking a stand, because then this is just going to keep going into season 3 and 4 and 5.
Yeah, I think that one of the more chilling things we heard from the family was when the dad said, you know, we had a dream of, you know, playing with our grandson, and that dream's been crushed for us. I think that's the biggest problem they have with the age difference too. Mm-hmm. It's like, I mean, it's double the age or whatever, but then also the fact that there's definitively not going to be a baby on the scene, which is something that they hold near and dear to their hearts and they want. Ultimately with them, who knows what's going to happen? Do I think that they're going to approve of Jenny? I genuinely can't tell you at this point. I thought that before we got all this, I thought this meeting was going to be productive. I have a feeling it's going to be very awkward, very tense. I'm excited to watch it, to be honest with you. This is the most excited I've been on the Jenny and Sumit storyline this season. So we'll see what happens with them. He does mention in the preview, like, I won't give up my family, no matter what. So we'll see if there's an ultimatum there. They did bring up, I want to point out that up until this point, we haven't really heard this, but 3 different times in this episode, we heard the phrase of, she can only be here every 180 days. So we want to get married so she doesn't have to keep leaving. So that leads me to believe that the clock's going to get run out on this and she's going to have to leave at least one time.
Yeah, I agree with you because I don't think, again, he's going to grow up take a stand. So I think she's going to have to go back to her daughter and her wife. And that's going to be, mm-hmm. I think, another set of like drama that we might get for an episode from the American side of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And okay, then last but not least, and I can't believe this was the biggest episode for this couple, but we're certainly going to talk about it because I have opinions. It's Ari and Baby, aka Ariella and Binyam. So here's what's going on with them. So Ariella's mom left at this point. Ari's mom is gone, and she is definitely in her feelings about this still. I think we talked about this last week where she feels it was kind of a vacation kind of situation until her mom left. And then she felt alone. She felt lonely. She doesn't know what to do. And it's been a day. It's literally, I say it's been a day because it sounds like it's been a day on the show. And she's already having trouble with this. They've looked up at places to go see because they kind of have a similar situation to the Paul and Karini, to the Devin and Jihoon, where she doesn't like the place that has been brought up. So she wants a new place. So they go and see this apartment. It looks like a decent, apartment, nice apartment. So in currency speak, in the exchange rate, it's going to cost $1,400 a month. And then Baby works four jobs and averages to about $500 a month in income. So he can't afford this, obviously. It's a third of the rent. That's not going to work. The apartment that he was fixing up was $170 per month, which again, seems a lot more realistic given what we hear he's getting for four jobs. He keeps bringing up the whole thing that he did that first episode where he's like, oh, I'll fix it in 2 weeks. That place will not get fixed in 2 weeks. There's no way. Now he's saying he'll fix it in a week. Again, unrealistic. But, and this is a big but, my thoughts with Ari are relatively negative at the moment because it seems like Ari's mom left and now we're hearing that, oh, Baby, Baby's not really giving her attention, or Baby's not keeping her happy. Baby doesn't really know who she is. Baby can't really understand her. Where was all this before you chose to move? Why is it coming out the day after your mom left? And why are you looking? Because to me, it's playing off like she's looking for every reason and any reason to just up and leave at this point. Because her thing was she needs options. That's why she's talking about potentially leaving. She needs options. And I'm like, well, this has been one day. Like, can you at least give it a shot? And I understand that she's also going through the pregnancy right now, which is a scary thing when you're in a foreign country and you're still not fully adapted, assimilated into the new setting. And you can't when you don't really have a solid place to live. But Sasha, am I wrong here for having issues with Ari? I mean, granted, Baby's definitely not doing enough, but also I feel like Ari's just gun shy. She's just waiting for any excuse to pull out at this point.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what I think. I think you're on the money because Baby, you see him say this, all the right things when he was washing the clothes, right? Like really saying, well, mm-hmm. I want you to stay. You don't have to, but I want you to stay. Because, I love you and it's only been a day. Like, of course you're going to be sad, right? That your mom's gone. You're going to be in a funky mood. That's normal. And I liked what he said. I think as a partner, he said all the right things. I don't think, right, he's doing all the right things. Later on, we find out. But for right now, in this moment, I really think he's not wrong. And I think that she is almost like the clock is ticking for when it's safe for her to leave. And that's probably why she's getting more stressed because I don't think she's staying because she loves him. I think she's staying because she feels bad because of what happened with his ex-wife and, all that trauma that's put on her shoulders. I think that's why she's staying. And that's clicking more and more with every confessional she has where she's like, oh, right, I guess I don't love him.
Right, but I don't want to be the villain. I don't want to be the one who hurts him further. Like, he lost his family at a young age. He has, he doesn't have anybody else. Now he has this baby that he's very excited for, but I don't love him. and I'm just doing this to appease him? And am I going to pick him over myself for level of happiness? It's a hard situation to be in. I'm surprised that they didn't consider having him move over and do the 90-day process. I'm curious why that wasn't brought up, because here's the thing. With doing the 90-day process, the visa process, it is exhausting. It does take a while, but ultimately, as long as you meet the poverty guidelines for financial sponsorship, you will be fine. And because if you have ample proof, so what you need is about 2 years worth of proof that you've been seeing each other. Okay. So you need that. And then you also need the money, which I think last time I looked at it was about like 9, 10K, 12K income. Like, it's not all that much. She comes from a family that's well situated, so they could definitely facilitate that if they need to. So, and I don't think we've heard of him having a criminal record. Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, we haven't. No.
So, yeah. So then all the signs point to you could have done that. So then if she wants to be close to family, but she also wants her child to have the father be there, why wouldn't this be on the table? Or did we miss it somewhere?
No, I agree with you. And on top of that, if he moved to the United States, he could see his first baby too.
Right.
So, So that's why I'm so confused. I think she's in this like savior moment, and she was just like, I loved Ethiopia. I traveled there. Cause that's what she, I think we got in the first few episodes from her, is that she just loved it and she thought she could move no problem.
Yeah. I think so too.
Wild.
I think so too. Yeah. Very wild. Very wild. Like, and that's the thing is that I think what ends up being the end point for me with this couple is that I just don't see her being happy here. I think him being snappy with her in the car was kind of his boiling point has been reached now, where he's just getting doubted constantly. He was like, are you construction? Do you think that you will know what's going to happen in a week? Are you construction? Which I thought, are you construction? Great line for a t-shirt somewhere.
Yes.
What's it called? If we were to parody it, it would be, are we humans or are you construction? That would be perfect as a tune.
Now that should be this podcast swag.
Yeah. We'll put it in the show notes. We'll be like, and we answer the question of, are we human or are we construction? That'll be for someone who's made it this far into the podcast. 2 hours and 10 minutes later, I think we've covered everything now with everybody. The last thing is, Ari and Baby are going to have the baby. Not baby, but baby's baby, very soon. It sounds like there was an emergency C-section that happened based on what we saw. So she's crying while delivering the baby, which is the saddest thing you want to see. Like, it's just not great. Here's hoping they do well, because I do think for everything that they're dealing with, they're still one of the more harmless couples amongst a sea of toxic couples. So let's hope they do fine.
Yeah, and I think her parents also made it to Ethiopia, which made me feel a little more like at ease for her situation, because dad is holding the baby, I think, in the trailer or whatever for next week or October.
Yeah.
I keep saying next October, week. Oh my god. But
it's going to be a long week if you're waiting.
It's in this pandemic, time is relative.
Yeah, honestly. Well, that wraps up everything that we had to talk about with regards to the show. Sasha, I could not have done this without you, so thank you for coming in. Where can people find
you? Yeah, you can find me on Twitter. My username is funsize_04. And thank you for having me, Puya.
Of course. It was my pleasure. I had a lot of fun. You can find me on all social media at PuyaIsm, on Instagram at PuyaIsm, on Twitter at PuyaIsm, twitch.tv/PuyaIsm. Get the hint. I use one thing for everything. It works. And then, because before we get out of here, I have a couple of things I need to address the class with, the bus, the train, before we get off the train. So if you like this podcast, if you don't like this podcast, please, either way, leave a rating and review for us. It really helps get the podcast out there. It helps me with getting feedback to see what's going right, what's going wrong, if there's any changes that need to be made. You can find all this information. Rob has a website.com/90dayfiance, 90 the number, all one word. That's robhasawebsite.com/90dayfiance. I appreciate every bit of feedback you can give me, positive or negative. Truly. And then I would like to put a spotlight on another show on the Rahapups Network right now before we get out of here. And that is the worldwide sensation that is Love Island. So we have our own coverage over here on the reality TV Rahapups Network with Kirsten McInnes and Brian Scali. They have coverage twice a week talking about this show that is back for season two. And it's been going on. It's been intense. There's a lot happening on there. I believe there's an episode six nights a week. So it's a lot to dive into. And these two do a stellar job every week, bringing on a guest to break down everything that's going down. So please check out the Love Island Rahapups podcast, available on the Reality TV Rahapups Network. And of course, everything to do with the Reality TV Rahapups Network is made possible by the patrons of RHAP. I myself am a patron. There's recently been a Discord that has been released for the RHAP patrons. That's been a lot of fun. We discuss, there's literally a channel for everything on their gang. There's a 90-day channel. We talk about 90-day stuff in there. People ask questions in there. There's a Drag Race one, Challenge, Survivor, Big Brother. You get the gist. There's also a Facebook group, and you get exclusive Patreon-only podcasts from Rob himself. If you would like a part in any of that, you can find that information over on robiswebsite.com/patron. Please join us. It's always a good time. This has been fun for me. I hope it's been fun for you. Until next week, where we talk about one show. Weird for us over here to talk about one show only. But till next week, have fun. I hope you've enjoyed your journey. We're at the destination. Tune in next week to get on the Hot Mess Express once more. Take care and goodbye.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.